You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
December 19th, 2020. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. And as always, I'm stuck here in Chicago instead of somewhere in the South Pacific or somewhere nice and warm, sitting under palm trees and watching the ocean. Anyway, I'm glad that you've joined me today at republicbroadcasting.org, where I've been for the last 10-plus years. I hope that you will consider visiting and subscribing to two other websites. That is SpingolaSpeaks.net and ScreeningSandyHook.net. I hope that you will feel free to email questions during the program to comments at spingola.email. And I invite you to visit the chat room at spingola.chatango.com. And you know where to review the names of the guests that I've had on previously. That is at spingola.com. And people always ask me about, well, they don't always, but some people ask me, hey, have you ever interviewed such and such or so and so? And every week I tell people how to find the archives for the programs, and people keep asking. So I don't know whether repetitiveness doesn't work or something. Anyway, or whether repetitiveness is too repetitive to remember. Anyway, we will take calls in the third hour, or maybe before, at 800-313-9443. I have one of my favorite people, one of my favorite guests on the program today. I first interviewed him way back in December 15th, 2010, and his name is Clint Richardson. He's son of Richard. I watched his documentary, The Corporation Nation, and I was just really impressed with it and really impressed with his documentation. And just he's just an impressive person. His website is realityblogger.wordpress.com, and there's just one G in blogger. Anyway, Clint, welcome to the program.
Why, thank you so much. It's good to be back.
Oh, it's very good to hear your voice.
And I always like to hear your voice. You know, it lightens up whenever you start introducing me, and that makes me always feel good.
Well, I didn't want to pour it on too heavy, but it's how it is. You've been to my house, you've had pasta at my kitchen table, you helped me leave the cult, which I am so grateful to you for doing that. I had seriously questioned things for such a long time prior to that, and my whole social life was kind of tied up in it. But I couldn't do it anymore. You either believe something or you disavow it. And you helped me. You changed my life. It was a life-changing decision. and I'm glad I made it. And even more glad, given some of the things that have come about in the last couple of weeks that maybe we'll have a chance to talk about. But what have you been doing? Just hanging out?
Always up to something, right?
Yes. That's what we do.
Well, I've got all this stuff. It's all coming in at the same time because I've done some I just finished my documentary, which is Lethal Injection 2, which is part one of that because it's going to be about a 30 or 40-hour presentation just on the entire system. And it's not just a vaccine documentary. It's not it's everything from, you know, the government side, the university side, the patent side, just the whole gamut of everything involved behind doctors being the number one cause of death. I mean, I don't know why this is not spoken of more. I know we've spoken about it. I know you're familiar with this. They're listed as the third leading cause of death. They know nothing about vaccines. They're taught nothing about vaccines or, for that matter, any kind of toxicology or anything. They have no idea what's in the vaccines. I mean, it's just amazing. There's this faith. They talk about a cult. We are all victims of this cult of what we call medicine. And, of course, medicine has been corporatized. It's a giant corporation that cares not about health. And so this first 8-hour presentation is, well, I'll put it to you this way. This first presentation is essentially what they do to us. Anyone who gets out of line, anyone who talks and tells the truth, anyone who whistleblows, you know, we're labeled immediately as whatever, you know, if it's it can be you're anti-Semitic or whatever, or it can be you're a conspiracy theorist, or it can be whatever it is. It's always something to assassinate the character. And it's always it's always fallacious. It never has anything backing it. Just this notion of you're this or you're that, and therefore your message is discredited, right?
Right.
And so I thought about that, and I thought, you know, we don't have that. We don't have a hit piece. We don't have something that can say, you know, because the number one answer I think most people get when it comes to vaccination, when it comes to health, when it comes to diet, when it comes to diabetes is, well, my doctor says this. It's my MD, my medical doctor says this. And we are generally caught in, you know, like deer in headlights. We really don't know what to say except, why do you trust your doctor? Just because he's got the white coat. You know, that's our best answer. And so I decided to really delve into, to start with, to completely discredit the medical industry. And that's exactly what I ended up doing. By looking into what, you know, what is a doctor? Where do they come from? How do they get their degrees? What is going on here that these people are so entrusted with our lives and our well-being that we were willing to put anything in our mouths or take anything into our veins or into our muscles through injection? What is it about this white coat, this concept of an authority figure? How did that happen? How did this organized crime syndicate and syndicalism of the university systems, how did this become our go-to for health when you've got all these naturopaths and all these people like yourself, in fact, who are doing all this? And what you find is that, for instance, I mean, just to give you one example, the American Medical Association, which of course is a union, essentially a private non-government corporation, a lobby, and you know they were sued several years ago by the sort of class action thing, if you will, by the chiropractors, because the AMA, the American Medical Association, that represents all those medical doctors. You know, they did this 10-year smear campaign on chiropractors, which is why we all, without even realizing it, we're brainwashed into thinking we should go to the MD instead of the chiropractor. We should go to the MD instead of the nutritionist or the naturopath or any other type of doctor. We somehow think that doctors know everything, and it turns out they know virtually nothing when it comes to these drugs and vaccines that they're prescribing. And everything that they do know pretty much comes from either a special interest group that represents pharma, pharma being the lobbyist group for big pharma, big pharmaceutical companies, or it comes from groups in that are non-governmental organizations in government that basically are pharma reps and, really corrupted people. There is no neutral body that is advising on vaccines or advising on drugs. And as we know, the FDA doesn't test drugs. It relies on pharmaceutical companies to do the testing themselves, which, of course, is problematic and a conflict of interest. So all of this, in a much more expanded version, goes into this first part of the documentary, along with other things. But the whole point is, now you have something to present to your family, to present to your friends, to present to anybody who dares argue with you who are doing the research and who are doing, you know, looking at the science, looking at the studies, looking, and then you just make a conscious decision, a moral decision, a spiritual decision, and a medical decision not to vaccinate yourself or your children. You can now show this to them, and when you see this, there's no way you can come out from that and still have faith in that cult. And when I say cult, a big part of this documentary is looking into this cult of Asclepius, which, you know, the snake wrapped around the single,
right.
That is the symbol of medicine, which has been confused and somehow integrated with the staff of Hermes. And it's real interesting when you go through the history of that and you look, well, how did that happen? How did the god of death become the god of, you know, god of Hermes actually mythologically was the god that took people to the underworld, whereas Asclepius was actually killed by Zeus because he was taking people out from the underworld and making them better, giving them health, right? So somehow those two symbols got mixed up along the way. And these doctors are all using the staff of Hermes, the god of commerce, the god of money, or not money, but you know, the whole history is there, and it's amazing. It is. They actually was the cult of Asclepius, and they used to allow snakes to, in amongst the sick, they used to allow snakes to roam around because they thought snakes were actually a healing creature, basically. And of course, most drugs and most things that they use are poison. And you know, if you lose just a little poison, it can actually help you instead of harm you. And that's basically where all this comes from. It really is a cult. And when I took that, and then I looked at the Hippocratic Oaths, and I said, well, are doctors actually taking the Hippocratic Oath? They're certainly breaking the oath if they're taking it. And it turns out,
they're not.
Big reveal, no one takes an oath. The oath that they do take has no sanctions, it has no punishments if they break it. The oath has been changed, it's been modified, it's been secularized. In other words, you're not making an oath. Every oath you make is to God, it's no other way. Any oath is always to God, it's you're putting your soul on the line. Basically, we're in a situation where we have this cult-like belief in doctors. We believe they take an oath to do no harm, and yet do no harm is not even in the original oath. The oath has been changed to where they can take a life. I mean, the whole thing is just so ridiculous when you see it for what it is, that there's no way you can come out from this and actually have faith in doctors anymore. It's really quite amazing. I mean, it really is. I can't speak to it enough. You actually have to see it to believe it.
Exactly. And you mentioned the taking of life, and I thought about organ extraction, which is taken, the organs are extracted from a life person who has been not, hasn't been given anything to put them to sleep, but just something to keep them from moving. They are taken from a live body. Your vital organs are no longer viable, taken from a dead body. Your heart, your kidney, it's no good from a dead body. And people are under the assumption that, and they've lined up, that they've been asked at the Department of Motor V, oh, would you like to be an organ donor? You are signing up for a surgical procedure. You have no idea what you're doing. And who is the Department of Motor V to be asking or talking about this? When you go to a doctor, they at least explain the procedure that they're going to be going through. It's just amazing.
So you have to realize, too, that any time you're dealing with any type of foreign body, and I mean, this includes when a woman gets pregnant with either, you know, she's positive blood and he's negative blood or vice versa.
Uh-huh.
They, in order to have that baby even, because the baby, because it's a different blood type even, the immune system fights the pregnancy. It's a foreign, it's not supposed to happen, right? So you get a heart transplant, you get a this transplant, you get a that transplant. The only way that's going to take is if they completely deaden your immune system. They have to take your immune system down to nothing so it doesn't fight off this, you know, foreign tissue. Well, not to mention if it's a different, you know, it has to be the same blood type, obviously. And then you know, all the diseases that come with that, because it's a foreign entity. Your body is going to, you know, your body's going to go into an immune attack, which is why they have to suppress it, which means it's going to start fighting whatever that organ is. And that means antibodies, and those antibodies aren't going to know the difference between your own organs and what you get in your body.
And most plantees are dead within 5 years because of all the things that occur to them as a result of the organ transplant.
Right. Well, it's an autoimmune response. You become
right.
your body starts fighting the organ, which is similar to yours, so it starts fighting your organs.
Right.
It's really simple it's kind of complicated to learn, but once you learn it and you look at the list of autoimmune diseases, I'm sure most people all people that are listening to this, if you've had a vaccine or some other injectable quote unquote drug, you know, you're suffering from one of many autoimmune diseases. If you have arthritis, you're suffering from an autoimmune disease, right? I mean, it's amazing when you look at all of the diseases caused by the medical field, whether that's, you know, this type of allo transplantation, meaning, you know, human to human, or xenotransplantation, which is animal to human, or human to animal, or whatever, insect to human. All of these things are being pumped into our bodies, and of course your body, the only thing it can do is mount an immune response. It just, look, your body is going to mount immune response if you get dirt in your system, right? If somehow dirt gets through your skin, into your system, you're going to get an immune response. That is the definition of an adjuvant.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, you're really knowing this, and of course I've spent, you know, 15, 20 years studying this, but knowing how that works and knowing how autoimmune disease works and that that's what everybody is suffering from in various degrees, you know, what a frustration. Let me give you, you know, we should really speak of this new so-called vaccine.
Right.
That's coming out, because there's so much to this that people need to know in order to make an educated choice whether you should get this. Now, you're going to talk to me, I'm going to tell you never to get any vaccine, because the ingredients that go along with that, it's not just a virus in water. You know, it's like thousands of millions and billions of proteins and DNA fragments that they can't filter out and all this stuff. And this thing that they're doing now, it isn't even a vaccine. It's very important to understand this has gone into what can only be called a technology, right? The transhumanist boards are lighting up because they're all excited because, hey, this is the first transhumanist vaccine. This is the first time they're going to actually introduce a virus, RNA, man-made RNA, synthesized RNA in a synthesized environment that's going to go directly into your cells, your proteins, and your DNA and reorganize your DNA. That is essentially what they want to do with transhumanism, right? So it completely experimental, completely unknown effects about what's going to happen. But I have a little different take on it, and I'm going to tell you right now that if you're a woman, especially, I don't know if it affects men like it would affect women, but I would assume that it would because it is part of the sexual reproduction system. All right, let me read you a little article. This is from Forbes, November 15th, 2020. COVID-19 compromises sperm count and quality in recovering patients. Now you think about that statement. Okay, it's unknown, not yet known whether this could lead to long-term effects on male fertility. My going theory is that COVID is a male contraceptive. It's a male sterilization tool. And that the vaccine is more geared toward a female, sterilization tool. And I want to explain why I think that is. Originally thought to mainly affect the respiratory system, researchers now know that the symptoms of COVID-19 are numerous and varied, with the virus affecting several different parts of the body. Now a new report has added possible detrimental effects on male fertility to the already long list. And the reason for that is because when they made this virus, and if you haven't seen my previous documentary, which is called Wagging the Dog, the story behind the story of COVID-19, this is a man-made virus admitted by all the people who made it. I even have another panel that a friend of mine has been looking into. Shout out to Matthew if he's listening. Who he found a panel where they said in 2016 that SARS no longer existed in nature. So it is actually impossible for SARS-2, wow. Mm-hmm. For SARS-2 to be a natural disease or a natural mutation for that matter because it didn't exist in nature anymore. Right? So, published in eClinical Medicine, and it said that samples of testes and epididymis, the tube that transports the sperm from the testes from six male COVID patients who had died from the disease and 23 patients who were recovering from mild or moderate cases of the disease, on these samples, comparing them to a control group of healthy men of similar ages and recovering, in the tissue from the men who had died, they found high levels of cells and proteins indicating inflammation, blood in the testes and epididymis, and dying cells. Now, when you have blood or white blood cells in the semen, that is a very good sign that something's wrong, that there's an attack or a disease of the sperm.
Right. Because your T cells, your thymus produces T cells, and it's supposed to help your immune system not be flushed out with the urine.
Exactly. In the men recovering from COVID-19, 39% had low sperm counts. So in men recovering from COVID-19, 39% had low sperm counts, despite having previously had at least one biological child through natural pregnancy. Uh-huh. Now the problem with this particular small study is that they didn't test the men before, which makes this a questionable study. But 61% of the men had an increased number of white blood cells in their semen, an indication that sperm function is compromised, and et cetera, et cetera. So there's a broad range of viruses that affect the male reproductive tract. particularly the testes, and this is where the important part comes in. She says, certain viruses such as mumps and HIV may cause severe damage and lead to male infertility. Zika virus has also been found to cause infertility in mice. Now, these three diseases are diseases that they have used gain-of-function research, meaning they've mutated in the lab. Zika is certainly a lab-mutated virus. And with the COVID-19, or what we're calling COVID-19 as the symptoms, SARS coronavirus 2 is the real name of it, and they added the HIV spike protein so that it could, in fact, infect humans and not just bat to bat or animal to animal. By doing this in a lab, then they can study if the virus, the coronavirus mutated in nature, what would it do to humans? You know, so they made the virus, and they admit this, they make the virus infectious to humans by adding an HIV spike to,
right?
So that HIV spike interconnects and communicates with certain receptors, which just happens to be the one in the testes, the one in the lungs, the one in this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
All the places that are being affected. Every medication has been an HIV medication designed to block the ACE2 receptors or the CD8, cells. And so you look at the background of every single medication that's been put out for COVID, it's an HIV or has been used for HIV in the past. Even the intramycin or whatever they're talking about now, it was used for HIV, even though it's a parasitic drug. Viruses act very much like parasites. So here we're in a situation where we know, at least in the early stages of any decent type of study, that COVID attacks male fertility. Now, what happens when we look at the vaccine? Now, the vaccine, scariest thing ever, and again, I hate calling it a vaccine because it's really not. It's a technology. When, you know, I posted this on my blog, ex-Pfizer head of respiratory research, Dr. Michael Yaden, and lung specialist, former head of the public health department, Dr. Wolfgang Wodarg, I think he was Sweden or one of those countries. They filed an application with the European Medicine Agency asking that the Pfizer and other studies be halted because certain questions had to be answered. And I'm just going to read this because I think this is so extremely important, if you don't mind.
No, please do.
First of all, the formation of so-called non-neutralizing antibodies can lead to an exaggerated immune reaction, especially when the test person is confronted with the real or wild virus after vaccination. So if you get the vaccine and then come across, well, they're saying it's a wild virus, which we know it's not. It's a man-made virus. But the point is, if you get the vaccination for the man-made virus, and then the man-made virus comes along, the so-called antibody-dependent amplification, or ADE, has long been known from experiments with corona vaccines in cats, for example. In the course of these studies, all cats that initially tolerated the vaccination, well, died after catching the wild virus. So in other words, you get the vaccine, and then you come across someone with, you know, you get the virus, however it's spread, because you have antibody-dependent amplification, which is what this is designed to, this so-called vaccine is designed to do. You will, if you're a cat anyway, you're going to die because it amplifies the virus itself. So you can't really call it a vaccine, can you? The vaccines are expected to produce antibodies against spike proteins of SARS-2 coronavirus 2. Remember, those are the same as, you know, those are the HIV spike proteins we're talking about, that were gain of function added to the virus. However, spike proteins also contain, so let me be clear. The vaccine is expected, the RNA mixes with your DNA and your body will then produce antibodies against spike proteins. That's the so-called goal. Spike proteins also contain sensitin homologous proteins, which are essential for the formation of the placenta in mammals such as humans. So, if, in other words, I'll finish, it must be absolutely ruled out that a vaccine against SARS-CoV-2 could trigger an immune reaction against sensitin 1, spelled S-Y-N-C-Y-T-I-N, 1, as otherwise infertility of indefinite duration could result in vaccinated women.
All righty, we'll take a break right here. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
It starts with you and me. We all can be.
All righty, welcome back.
If we take.
Our guest is Clint Richardson, and we are we're being educated about this COVID nonsense, about the so-called vaccine, which is horrific. An email question: do you know anybody that has actually admitted to creating the COVID-19 virus? I know that your documentary is going to be very well documented.
Well, the Wagging the Dog documentary, which has been out for quite a month or so, I don't even remember when I put it out now. So keep in mind, I'm not giving you any theories. What I'm giving you is a nine and a half hour presentation, which is hundreds of hours of actual
preparation.
It's footage of the public meetings, the public forums they had back in 2012, 2014, 2017, and all the information that went along with it, where Fauci himself actually introduces the meeting. And the meeting is where they suspended gain-of-function research. Gain-of-function means mutation. So I'm going to add something to make it more virulent. I'm going to add something to make it more contagious, more resistant to drugs, airborne. I can do whatever I want to do to the actual virus to make it either an added function, a mutation, or a loss of function. And that's why they call it gain of function studies. It's also called dual use research, meaning, you know, it can be used for good or bad. You know, it can destroy the world or save the world, you know, depending on whose hands it gets into. And, during these testimonies, during these forums and during those, it's all the scientists that are actually in charge of this and working towards, you know, these gain of function studies, the basic researchers are there giving their warnings about what could happen. This particular forum was, because they halted, they actually stopped that kind of research. It was very public on SARS, MERS, and H5N1. So this particular forum, they mention in there that everything from the Spanish flu, as they call it, which is a typhoid fever, everything from that to all the bird flus to the swine flu, to SARS, to MERS, to Zika, they're all man-made. They're all, in other words, they're done in a lab.
The Spanish flu, that they call it, actually was a result of a vaccine that they gave to all of these military people. It killed millions of people.
Across the world. And,
yes.
And one must wonder, because it happened with our military, it happened with the Russians, all the military men were vaccinated. And all the military men, of course, were dying. And, you know, I cover that in my first lethal injection movie, which was 2011. That the whole story is in there. They explain right from the Centers for Disease Control how they dug it up from the permafrost, I think in Alaska. Mm-hmm. Dug it up. They dug up an old Inuit Eskimo woman and got the original virus from the lungs. Resequenced it, patented it, and then shortly after the patent was granted, suddenly we had Spanish flu again. Right. Or swine flu, or whatever it's called. So, yeah, it's crazy. And this is all a patent game. It's all about manipulating it, resequencing, and then patenting it, owning it so that nobody else can do any research on it. And if it's released, no one can do any cure or anything like that. No vaccines, no nothing, unless they get your permission and pay you because you own the proprietary rights to a virus. I mean, this is insanity, of course, but that's why I say it's really, we're talking about technology now because it's biological technology. It's something not natural. And you know that because you can't patent anything that's natural. So go look at the patents for these things. Anything that's patented is not natural.
Right.
It doesn't come from nature. Look up the patents, right? So, yeah, you're talking about, and to answer that question, yes, they admit to all of this. They're talking about it because they have to. They know no one's going to be watching these forums. They're public, but they're not, nobody can sit through 100 hours of stuff like I do and boil it down to, you know, the important parts and then present it. Nobody wants to do that. You know, I put that on myself. So it's out of their own mouths. Fauci gets up, talks about how he's in charge of making and funding through the NIH all of these projects. So it's government funded. And the worst part is, this particular meeting was H5N1, where they mention all this stuff. Highly pathogenic H5N1 can only transfer from animal to human or through another, secondary host. And Anthony Fauci gets up and says, this is what we did to make it, you know, we took H5N1, which is already highly pathogenic. It kills 60% of the people it infects. And we added gain of function research through adding some type of new ability. We made it infectious to humans. So we no longer has to go from a human to an, or from an animal to a human. Now in the lab setting, it goes from human to human. And now we can study it. Unfortunately, the incidence of lab released, you know, lab accidents, lab released viruses is very high. There is, you know, even these level 4 security bio labs, they're, it's ridiculous the amount of accidents they have. So, you know, how this was released, why it was released, Anthony Fauci funded the original SARS research and MERS research, and when they banned that type of gain-of-function research, because this particular SARS or COVID-2 was already in the works, they were already doing the research, since they couldn't do an American anymore, they funded it to go to China. And it was held in the Wuhan Biosecurity Level 4 lab. And I'm assuming that's where it was either accidentally released, purposely released. I honestly don't know. I'm not here to fulfill any conspiracy theory about how the thing got released. I can only tell you how it was created, where it was sent to, and therefore probably, like most likely, where it was accidentally released. So they're storing every virus known and unknown to man, everything that has been manipulated to be more infectious, more deadly, airborne, you know, every gain of function, every mutation you can put on, drug resistance has been put on these things, and now they're being stored in these very, very fallible laboratories that say they're high security, but there's no such, you know, humans are fallible. They're not infallible.
Of course.
So this is what they admit. And, you know, the next one I'm going to put out is going to be just the same. It's going to be more of these forums because I don't expect people to want to sit through hundreds of hours of forums just to get these little tidbits of admissions that they come out with, you know. And so that's what wagging the dog is. You don't ever have to wonder what they're saying is because they tell you. They explain, and I explain, exactly how they do it. I mean, they admit it. And there's Fauci, the guy in charge of it all, and he gets up there with Trump and everybody, and, you know, he never talks about that. He never talks about the fact that he's in charge of making H5N1 already killing 60% of humans, making that infectious from human to human. He never gets up there and says, he funded SARS research and MERS research to make it more, you know, contagious and more.
And AIDS. So, he was also involved with the AIDS situation.
So that's another thing that's just coming out probably tomorrow is I got the real, to me it was an honor and a privilege to be invited to do a roundtable discussion with Dr. Judy Mikovits.
Oh, she's lovely.
She's wonderful. And I'll be honest with you, I almost stopped making my documentary, Wagging the Dog, when I heard her for the first time, because she, the first time I'd ever hear anybody talk about everything I just found. I'm thinking I've got the scoop, you know, I've got everything. Oh my God, I've got the whole world, you know, this is it. Everybody's going to be, and then I hear her and she's the only one I've ever heard. And of course she's a whistleblower. She's been completely abused by Fauci and all the people involved in this. And let me tell you, these people they're sociopaths. They're psychopaths. They take
no responsibility.
No responsibility for what they're doing because they have a license to do it. And because government gave this type of research a pass. It's biological weapons research, but they call it peaceful and, whatever's in the U.S. code that makes it an exception to biological. And in the panel discussion, the guy from Homeland Security that was the representative there, you know, he gets up and he says, hey, if we were to do this type of research in the Homeland Security Department, we'd be charged with treason and, with biological weapons manufacture. But because the same research is being done by these legitimate so-called scientists under the National Institutes of Health, where it's funded and regulated thereof, it's not called biological weapons. It's the same exact thing, same exact research. Create a biological weapon. That's exactly what I do, according to this, you know, anybody who works in the industry. Yet, these people, you know, Fauci's directly responsible for funding this stuff through the NIH and the organization he works under the NIH. You know, I don't know what to say other than, you know, Francis Boyle, who wrote the Biological Weapons Act in U.S. Code.
Right.
Where it gives these exceptions. They basically nullified the law by saying, well, it's okay if you call it this and call it friendly and call it peaceful and call it legitimate, you know.
Right.
He says all you got to do is enforce the international Geneva Conventions that law came from. But because we're dealing with a completely corrupt, illegitimate government structure, a corporation set up to pose as a government, because we're dealing with something that's not a legitimate government, these agencies are not legitimate. They're corporations created by independent agencies created by Congress. Right? No different than the Federal Reserve. The Post Office, Federal Reserve, and the NIH, they're all the same. Right? They're all independent agencies of government. They're allowed to do things. They're given these exceptions. And so these people who are creating biological weapons, fully funded by government and the military, and then they're posting the instructions on how to do it, right? The papers that they write that say, okay, we did this, we grew this, we infected it with this, we gained a function of this, they're putting that on the internet so anybody can see. Anybody with a decent amount of equipment in their garage can then recreate that viral structure that, you know, it's basically just information, if you will, logical information, reconstruct it, and suddenly you have the same exact thing, and someone can just, you know, terrorist group, a government. It's a biological weapon. It's like putting the instructions for a nuclear bomb onto the internet. I mean, and just say, you know, here, just go ahead. That's what the whole debate was in the first place. Okay, it's one thing to do the research, but then should you share it with everyone? And their answer was, yes, we should, because we're scientists, and we're of the cult of science and scientism, and we have known that no one should ever halt the progress of so-called science. And when we look, and in that documentary I show it, 75% of scientific experiments are no longer reproducing. They're not doing science. They're creating artificial life, artificial biology, something. All of this gears towards the transhumanist agenda, including this new so-called vaccine. So my opinion, Deanna, and anybody who's listening, if you're female especially, I don't know if this will affect males. I haven't figured that out yet. But if you're going to get this so-called vaccine, then plan on never having children. Period. End of story.
True. I'm kind of following the questions and comments in the chat room. And it doesn't have immediate consequences. People are not going to start dropping over dead. Whatever is in the vaccine is designed to change RNA, DNA, sterilize you, change you. If people were dropping dead all over the place, then of course nobody's going to trust the vaccine. But since there's no immediate consequences that people can really see, they'll have more trust in going along.
It's one of the things I really cover in this new documentary are all these doctors throughout history who are quoted as saying, look, I have all these patients, and of the patients I have, the kids especially that are vaccinated, and the adults, they're all sick. You know, they might not have got the thing they were vaccinated for, but they're five times more likely to have ADD or autism, or 2,000% more to have cancer, this much percent more. The amount of disease that goes on with vaccinated kids, and that's exactly from what we're talking about. We're talking about the body being turned against itself. And that's what this is. That is what sterilization is. Sterilization is an autoimmune response. Now, I'll say it again from my first documentary, The Lethal Injection 1. It's still up there. In the first half hour, we go over how they sterilize horses, and that vaccine is also useful for humans. 90% sterilization rate they had in horses. And all they're doing is injecting a piece of pig ovary into the horse or the human, whatever animal. And because the body recognizes that as a foreign protein, a foreign article, a foreign orthologue, whatever you want to call it, it develops antibodies. It says, well, that's not supposed to be here. Unfortunately, the antibody then sees your own ovaries or your own sexual organs and starts attacking that. It prevents spermatogenesis, and it prevents the female from being able to form, or the sperm from being able to enter the egg. It destroys the sperm or the egg. So, you know, this is the same thing. Now, when it comes to this,
we're going to cut you a break. We'll be right back. All righty, welcome back. Our guest is Clint Richardson, and we're talking about a lot of things. It's I was looking at the chat room, looking at questions there, and reading what you were saying. And we're surrounded by people who really have a very different agendas, and it's very unfortunate.
Yeah, and, you know, unfortunately, the only thing we have, and it seems like the only thing we have left, it seems, is our outlets like this. I mean, in my opinion, we're already defeated, just because, you know, the majority of the population is still completely brainwashed. And a big part of that is this trust in professionals, medical professionals. Any title you get from a university is, you know, the prestige, the illusion, the delusion that prestige is, the magical term. It puts this false sense of security and trust on these people who have diplomas and credentials, you know. These terms, you know, I did a whole article on the education system and what these terms actually mean, and it's pretty amazing when you etymologically look at what a degree is used in ascertaining a degree of criminal behavior. The degree of crime, you know, it's a degree means you have, you're at a certain degree or a certain ability or a certain licensure to do things that other people can't do. It's, and if you think about what that means, you know, if you have a license to kill, well, you have a license
then you can kill.
To break the
sure.
law. Right. So doctors have a license to commit malpractice.
They have a license to do anything. Yes.
Well, mal means evil. Malpractice, evil practice. As long as they have insurance, they can commit malpractice. And there is no penalty. There's nothing. That's the problem with insurance, of course. So you literally have to be, I mean, in my opinion, you have to be crazy to go to a doctor that has malpractice insurance, because you're pretty much giving the...
To go ahead to kill you.
Yeah, you're agreeing that he has the right to harm you. And
One of our email listeners said that a lot of people get a vaccine because their insurance pays for it, which is mind-boggling to me. So what if the insurance pays for it? Vaccines have toxic ingredients, but they'll accept it if the insurance pays for it. What kind of thinking is that?
The question that we need to ask ourselves is, at what point are we willing to give up our spiritual moral guidance and say, well, I can't work. They're not going to let me work unless I get a vaccine. They're not going to let me shop. They're not going to let me do this unless I take this transhumanist mark, this RNA that's going to completely screw up not only me, but my children and their children in ways you can't even comprehend, because you're rearranging the DNA into who knows what that's going to do to your active DNA, and then let alone your inactive DNA, right? Which they don't even know what the purpose of it is.
Exactly.
It's crazy. Crazy.
Alrighty, we are at the top of the hour. We will be right back momentarily.
Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
All right, we are back with our guest. He's one of my favorite people. He is Clint Richardson. His website is realityblogger.wordpress.com. A blogger is with one G. He created the Corporation Nation. It's just a fabulous, fabulous video presentation. And since then, which he created way back in, well, 10 years ago, probably took him a couple of years to do it. Together with the information. But anyway, Clint is great. I love him. He's my buddy. Yeah.
Well, I mean, to be I thank God for you as well, because, you know, there are there are a lot of people that aren't interested in the truth. I know we call this the truth movement. I know we call it all kinds of things, but there are people out there selling books, selling products, selling all these things, and those things, a lot of times, depend on lies. They depend on what I call the patriot mythology, depend on, you know, a lot of the lies we tell each other, because it makes us feel better, and we don't face the truth. And what I really appreciate about you is that you're always open to the truth. You're always open to evidence. And that is so strange in this, even in this, all what we call alternative movement. I mean, I remember when I first started talking, I'm like, wait a minute. What's going on here? Why are all these people talking about the Federal Reserve like it's something it's not? Right? What? So I look into it. I do all this research. I show that Ron Paul is lying through his teeth to people. I show Ron Paul to be a big fraud, and I show the Federal Reserve not to be what people say it is. And
it's a whipping boy. It's a whipping boy for Congress, right?
Well, I mean, it's no, like I said, it's no different than the post office. I mean, you can, everybody can do this, right? Go to Wikipedia, type in the phrase, independent agencies of government. You're going to find every independent agency, including the Federal Reserve, and yet we're supposed to believe it's Congress created it, and the creator controls, right? That's the that's the foundation of law. The whole thing is just this ridiculous story, and it keeps getting parroted, and new documentaries are made parroting the old ones, and all the quotes are fake quotes. And when I told you that, you didn't treat me like everyone else did. You didn't try to ban me or censor me or not let me on the show. You actually looked. You actually
looked,
said,
well,
wait,
the
maybe there's something.
I looked at
exactly.
The records.
Exactly. You look at the congressional record. You can see all this stuff is not true. Right? It wasn't done on Christmas.
You know, everybody went away for the holidays. That is not true.
No,
look in the congressional record. You can see who was there. They had a quorum. The House had a quorum. The Senate had a quorum. They had a quorum. The president signed it.
He ran his campaign on signing it. I mean,
yeah.
Everything was wrong. The quote where he says, I'm a most miserable man. He never said that. They took half the quote from his book that he wrote, or it was a book on his speeches, and he made that speech way before he signed the Federal Reserve. So all these quotes, you tell people that, they refuse to retract because it's in their books and they gotta sell books, and if they admitted that this whole story was false, they would, they'd have to retract their books. They'd have to actually admit that they were wrong. And they have to. And yet here I am going, please, someone out there, prove me wrong. Well, I want to be wrong so I can be right. But that's not the way this whole so-called movement, truth movement, works. There is no truth. You know, there's no alternative to truth, by the way. Truth is truth. You can't have an alternative. So an alternative to the mainstream, which we know is a big fat lie, doesn't make me feel that much better after all this time in it. So, and I, you know, there's people out there, good people that are in this, like you. But unfortunately, the you know, we're relegated to.
Exactly, we're
really relegated down. Yeah. If you tell the truth in this business, you're not going to do too well, and I can attest to that. You know, and I give everything away for free, and I still can't. I mean, it's the whole thing is so pathetic. So anyway,
if the government were going to infiltrate an organization or an entity in order to spread things, rumors and things, which they pretty much admitted that they did, then it would be the alternative movement.
Unfortunately, yeah. And, you know, if I were a private people who made a constitution and did all this stuff to protect my family and my interests, of course I would convince everybody else that the Constitution was for them as well. No.
No, it was for the people. were the rich people who went away behind closed doors and wrote something for the rich people, for the elite.
Exactly. And then they incorporated the rest of us. So
exactly.
into Washington, D.C., outside of the United States. So, you gotta step back for a moment, and this really, it goes towards the notion that, if you think about it, I mean, it is a true statement to say that if we didn't have that history, if we didn't have that fake history of the founding fathers, we didn't have the, you know, all the propaganda, all the history books, and all the documentaries and the Hollywood versions of slavery and the Hollywood versions of this, we wouldn't have a country. The history is what actually gives these people the credibility that they have comes from the history of their forefathers. Now, every president was related to each other. Every president is related to George Washington. Every president is related to the kings of England. All those people that signed the Constitution, yes, they were the nobility. They're all related, and they all came from the same family, the royals of Europe. Mm-hmm. Those are the people. And I don't know why people haven't figured that out. I don't know why there's still this... Again, I call it the patriot mythology, but if you were to control people, you would give them the idea, first of all, you take them away from God, because, you know, in the Declaration of Independence, what does it say? All men are created equal, which means in nature we're equal. It doesn't mean in legalism we're equal. It means in nature we have no status. We have no one's higher than anyone else. It's nature, right? And then they say that your rights are unalienable. It's the only time they ever use that phrase, unalienable, because that means God-given, that means inherent, that means that they're not sellable. And why did they put that in the Declaration of Independence? Because they were talking about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Why did they create the Bill of Rights? Because they were talking about themselves and their right to bear arms, which is their heraldry, their family line, their bloodline. Now, everything else they said, I was just writing about this to someone else, everything else they said, they used the word inalienable. After that, it was always inalienable. Inalienable this, inalienable that. And that means your rights, your inherent rights can be sold, you know, or traded in for legal rights.
Right.
And so if I was to control people, I would tell them your rights come from this little piece of paper, this piece of hemp parchment that we call the Constitution. I would convince you that your rights, your inherent rights, your God-given rights, don't come from God, don't come from the God of nature, the law of nature, they come from this piece of paper instead. And you see, the key to being a free man, male or female, is to understand your rights come from reality, God, not a legal document. Now, what's not understood by the same people, and any constitutional scholar will tell you, even Obama did a speech on this, I was surprised. He said, look, the Constitution does not give you any rights. If you're sitting there thinking that you have a right to carry a gun because the Constitution says you have the right to bear arms, you're sadly mistaken. First of all, it's not talking about guns, it's talking about your right, your blood right, because the law recognizes blood, or it recognizes non-blood, legal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, if you believe that your right to bear guns, which they now have turned regular guns into firearms, which are like cannons and stuff like that, a handgun is not even a firearm. It's like, you're talking about like flintlocks and things with powder that go boom. You know, the whole thing is just ridiculous because, you see, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, they protect inherent rights, nothing else. Free speech, freedom of religion, those don't come from government. That comes from God. That comes from nature. That comes from being from existence, from life, right? But if you can be made to believe that those rights are not inherent in you, right, that they weren't there before the United States existed, right, because that's when the Constitution happened. So, in other words, no man had these rights until the Constitution. Well, that doesn't make sense, does it? You see, they've convinced people and they've tricked people through religion and through the legal system to abandon God, to abandon their creator, and therefore abandon all inherent rights in order to accept legal rights or government-granted rights. And the only way it can do that is if you say my natural, inherent, God-given rights are, in fact, sellable. In other words, inalienable. Now, if it was unalienable, none of this, if they would have kept that word, the United States couldn't even exist, because no one could ever take anything from you that was not their due. There's nothing they could do to you. They could not tax you. They could not do anything if all your rights are inherent. Because that means you have the right in every case to say no. And the only way that you know you're actually free, the only way that anyone can ever say I'm a free man, male or female, is the ability to say no at every turn. The choice to say no. And what the legal system does is it takes your choice away. That's what incorporation is. When you incorporate something, now you're under that law. Now you're under those rules. You're no longer in nature. You're no longer under God. You no longer have unalienable rights. Right? This goes back to even the communist notion, the Marxian notion, if you will, of being able to sell your labor, right? They convinced you that your labor, well, they convinced people way back when that your labor is, again, inalienable, meaning it can be sold. It's not unalienable. In other words, the product of your labor is inalienable. It can be sold. And therefore, we became wage slaves. We're paid to be used, right? That's what employment means. To employ something is to use. And now, everything that we make as employees, as people being used for their labor, guess what? We don't own anything. We're making all that for them. Everything, every scientific discovery, every cure, every disease for that matter, they're patenting it in their name, using our labor, using our brilliance, using our abilities, all because we don't understand the simple concept that our rights come from God, from nature, the law, that they're unalienable. And the way they hold power over us is that their rights are unalienable, while they tricked us into agreeing, basically, contracting that's into a different set of law where they give us rights, like the right to be put in pain, punish, tax, license, and that's Title 42, Section 1981. If you care to look, that's your right, according to government, to be put in pain, taxed, licensed, and punished and extorted, right? Why would you agree to that? Why would you say, yeah, bring it on. I'll agree to that. Just give me, some benefits, a little Social Security, mark of the beast, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. All right, so that's where we're sitting. We're sitting on the cusp of this great understanding of who and what we are, that we are of God, we are of Jehovah, we are of the existence, that we are not legal entities, that we are not persons, we're not statuses. We're not legal things. We're not property. And until that happens, and until we give up this ridiculous notion that a piece of paper gives us the rights that nature provides us, that God gives us, we are stuck. And you know what? If you want to continue in personhood and the status that they've given you and have all those juicy little legal rights, you're going to take a vaccine. Because you see, persons have vaccines. You're not. But if you're going to continue acting as a United States citizenship, get all your benefits and all that, then you're going to have to submit to a vaccine. Why? Because the person that you're acting as, the status you're acting in society, in commerce, using their credit, their money, and all their copyrighted law and everything else, that's their property. And in order for you to use it, You're gonna get it. You're gonna get a vaccine. You're gonna quit, go back to God, in other words, back to nature, back to reality, back to the law of nature, or you're going to get a vaccine. I'm sorry to tell you this, but that's how it's gonna be. No amount of bickering or complaining or talking or radio showing is gonna do anything. You're gonna have a choice. And you walk away, give up, just like it says in the Bible, just like, I mean, it's a guide to what's happening now. It tells you what the law is and how to avoid all these legal things. I'm telling you, right now we're at that cusp. We're at that point where as a society, but more importantly, individually, we have to make a choice. We go back to nature or we become transhuman.
That was very well said.
Sorry, shall we tell jokes to lighten up the mood? Mushroom walks into the bar. Bartender says, hey, you're not allowed here. And Mushroom says, why not? I'm a fun guy. No?
Oh?
I tried. Fun guy, you know, fungus.
Oh, fun guy. Oh.
Yeah.
I don't get jokes sometimes. It's just beyond me. Cause I was thinking about, you know, the audit, the Fed. There's an audit every year.
The camper.
And they publish it and you can see it and all of the, you talk about corporations. And the corporatocracy took place pretty quickly after the so-called Civil War. That was the whole purpose for the Civil War was to impose a federal government on the entire nation because the people in the South decided that they wanted local rights. They wanted their individual freedoms. And Lincoln and his Marxist friends and Marx and Engels were very much on his side. 500,000 Marxists from the failed revolutions, the Marxist revolutions in Europe, came over and fought with the North. Now that's got to tell you something. And then after that, then corporations were given the same rights as an individual. And they took those rights and this is what we ended up with.
Right. And God, that's really what, you know, that's really what incorporation is. You know, the more the states go under a federal rule, the more incorporated they become. In other words,
right.
The more choice they lose, right? The more independence they lose. But it's easier. And I'll tell you what, you can find hundreds, at least, of books on the subject of what's called the administrative state. You won't find books on the word corporation, but that's what it really is. But when you're talking about anything that's administrated, it has to be a corporation. It can't
right.
be anything else.
With a CEO. Okay. We will be right back momentarily.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good.
All right, we are back with our wonderful guest today, Clint Richardson. His website is realityblogger.wordpress.com. Amazing going through this information. It just rings with truth and clarity, and it helps you to understand what's going on. It gives you the opportunity to make choices that knowledgeable choices. If you know what you're dealing with, then you can be prepared to make a choice that's good for you.
And you know, the other thing about this is, you know, if you believe your power comes from government, Well, then, guess what?
Right.
You have no power because they're the sovereign, and therefore you're powerless because it's always above the law. Right? The king is always above the law. So this also gives you, you know, understanding your place in the world, in the universe, understanding that you're not a creation of the state, that you're an act of God, not an act of the legal system. That's where your power comes from. And trust me when I say government recognizes that power. That is when it sees a religious man, and in other words, a man religiously following the law of nature, law of God, well then, you can't touch it. You can't contract with you. This is why the Bible is so against all this stuff that we do in the legal system. Every legal word and every legal law is against the law of nature, the law of reality, the law of God. You can't act in fiction and also worship the God of nature. You just can't. It's just impossible. So your power to stop this stuff that we're talking about comes from within you, not from some external source, because you are part of existence. You are part of nature. It is your job. It is your duty. It is the purpose and meaning of life to keep life itself, to keep nature pure. It is your sustenance. It is your life force. It is what supports you. Government doesn't keep you alive. Government doesn't give you air. It doesn't give you food, although it does give you stinky cheese, right? It gives you soup, maybe. Gives you coupons for food, maybe give you some money. Government does not support you. Nature supports you. And the God, see, the problem is people separate these things. But it's all one. It's all one being. And if you're not acting as part of it, if you're not protecting that which is your creation, your creator, if you're not protecting that which sustains your life, if you're not keeping yourself and your children pure of all of these drugs and the pollution and everything. I mean, look, I don't know how to tell people this. There's, you know, people think you're going to be judged after you die. The judgment happens now. If you poison your well, the judgment comes when you are poisoned by your own well because you've pissed in it. That's your judgment. Right? You're talking about something that's neutral. The law and laws of nature. There's no judgment going on. There's no good and evil. There's nothing. All of that stuff comes from us. We are the devil, or we are an angel, or we are this. But what we cannot continue to be is puppets. With no natural master. We can't continue to be led by laws that we know are 100% against the law of nature. We can't allow this to keep happening. And the power to fight that, again, it's, you can't fight government with government law, government power. You have to have a higher power, a higher authority, a higher law. And I tell you right now that if you don't believe that government believes in God, because I assure you it does. Everything it does is anti-God, therefore it must believe in God, and it defines what God is according to the ancient meaning of the word Jehovah, the name of God, right? A verb, which is self-existent. Defines you. It's a church term. What is an act of God? Defined as an act of nature. That's it. That man is not predict of, void or, you know, has no part of. You're talking about acts of nature, earthquakes, storms, that sort of thing. This is a legal term that refers to Jehovah.
Clint, you keep cutting out. I wonder why.
I don't know. Am I still cutting out?
No.
Okay.
Weird. Oh, it's a Skype connection.
It's just Skype.
Yeah, stupid Skype. Thanks, man.
Well, the point I'm trying to make is just that your power comes from reality, not from the fiction that is the state. And you're never going to defeat the fiction. You're never going to destroy the Matrix from within, are you?
No!
You can't do anything in the simulation. You have to be outside of it.
Exactly. Alrighty, we are going to a break. We will be right back with our guest. Alrighty, we are back with our guest, Clint Richardson, and we're talking about a lot of things. We're talking about the fact that government, will not respond to us because we're not part of it. We have no rights under the Constitution. Our rights come from God, not from George W. Bush said was a GD piece of paper. So even he was, for once in his life, perhaps, he was being honest.
Well, he was being sincere, too, because he knows his rights don't come from the Constitution. He knows his rights are unalienable, and that the Constitution is only there as sort of an insurance policy to make sure that government can never take those rights away from he that has them in. Inherently. Now, George Bush, you want to talk about the bloodlines? I mean, George Bush, he is, and John Kerry, who's his eighth cousin, when you look at their lineage, they go all the way back to Vlad the Impaler. They are not even cousins of the kings of England. They are direct descendants of 38 or 39 different kings.
Yeah,
I mean, it's freaking amazing when you look at it. I don't understand why people don't know this, because it's been out there for a long time, and that all presidents are related, and everybody that runs for president is related. Everybody in the Congress, the Senate was related to a cousin of Obama. I mean, it just amazes me that people don't know this. The problem is that we're, and nice to hear this, but if you look up the word hypocrite, you get a really interesting definition, and it's simulation. So if I simulate that I'm something, right, and I'm not actually acting the part, well, then I'm a hypocrite, right? I'm a simulator. The same thing. The only difference is, perhaps, that a hypocrite absolutely knows that he's a hypocrite, but a simulator maybe doesn't know that, you know, for instance, most Christians don't know they're hypocrites. They're not following the law of God. They're not following Christ in any way. They're worshiping Christ instead of God. And, you know, there's this whole problem going on there, because how else can corporate churches, you know, become so powerful unless they trick you into personifying and anthropomorphizing everything and taking everything literally, right? So you gotta understand that we're all acting as hypocrites. Whether, you know, even if you're talking about being a so-called American, which none of you are, because your person exists in the United States, which is in Washington, D.C., which is not even part of the 50 states, not part of America, United States of America. You're talking about a district, you know, another word for Caesar or seizure. Distraint and distress is how that's actually defined. You're under distress, you're under distraint, you're seized. Right? That's what district means. So if you look at what a hypocrite is, one who feigns to be what he is not. One who, and this is the important part right here, this is the part that is applying to us, because we believe our rights come from government, a piece of paper, instead of from God. One who has the form of godliness without the power. Or who assumes an appearance of piety and virtue when he is destitute of true religion. Now, true religion doesn't mean what most people think it is. We're all involved in false religions, corporate religions, right? Religions are persons too. Corporations. So, you know, even the Catholic Church and the Mormon Church are corporations, souls, you know that.
Oh, yes. That was one of the first things when I was the Family History Center director. We had 50 volunteers that worked at the Family History Center. It was a very, very, very busy one. It was one of the top 10. And when I would deposit the weekly deposit, it went into the corporation of the president. And I thought, what?
Well, the official title is the Corporation of the President of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Yeah.
Right. And then when I started, I did a research, talking about the genealogy, I did a big research project, and all of the people that are in leadership positions currently in that church are descendants and or closely related to the initial leaders of the church, often in the very same organization like Sunday school or whatever. And so, it's really kind of a family business.
Well, but you got to understand, there's no difference between that and government.
There's no difference.
Yeah, these are they're allowed to exist in that way because they're family. They're and if you think about it, I mean, let's face it. That's what all governments are. Governments are, they're corporations that consist of families. And another word for corporation is family. You know, that's, unfortunately, that's the truth. You can look it up. Corporation and family are similar terms.
Right.
Because you're talking about, you know, your family of employees. We use the term all the time. We just don't think about it, right? So, if you're considering any one of you listening, who are you gonna leave? In your will, who are you going to leave everything to? Maybe you have a business. Who are you going to leave the business to? It's your family. Right? I mean, that only makes sense. So it doesn't make sense to think that someone created this so-called country with any other intention than their own family. It doesn't make sense. And if they would have done that, they would have said that. You see, it's very important to understand that we are not the people. We are not we the people. We are not them because we gave up that right. If we have the right, we gave it up and we accepted legal rights which are non-inherent and they're practicing their own law, their own private law. It's so important to understand this. And again, it's why you have no power as a quote-unquote citizen. You can't fight government while under government. It's impossible. Hypocrite, again, one who has the form of godliness without the power. In other words, one who is claiming to be a Christian or claiming to be a patriot, but you're not doing anything. I mean, if you're claiming to be like the founding fathers, shouldn't you be in a war by now? Because I guarantee you when I redid the Declaration of Independence, and I said, okay, let's take the Declaration of Independence and compare how it is today with the United States. Let's replace the king with the United States, or the president, or, you know, but mostly the kingdom, right? The entire structure that is the executive department. Let's compare the Declaration of Independence and the grievances, and let's see, is it worse today than it was when the states or the colonies were fighting the king and the king was forcing them to use the king's money so they could never get ahead? Well, that's what the United States is doing. States can't print their own money, so we have to use federal money, right? You look at the grievances and they're nothing compared to what the United States has done to us today, has done to the states. Nothing. I would rather live back then. Honestly. I mean, it's like if you look at the grievances, you'll find that they're nothing. Because now we have all this technology. We have a standing army. One of the biggest complaints was that the king had a standing army. And yet he has a military base. And the presence of a military base is a sign that you're under martial law. You're under control. Nothing about what the king was doing to the colonies is any different than what the United States is doing to the states. And that should be a big lesson to people, because it's the same people. It's the same family. Right? It's just a franchise. It's just a franchise of the crown, basically. So, you gotta think, if you're truly a patriot, if you think about what Pat Riot, a patriot, well, right. Okay, you're a force to be reckoned with, but you're not acting, you're Pat. That's what Pat means. So you got all these people that are patriots, Pat, you have a Pat Riot, you have a riot that's not happening, you have a bunch of people claiming to be something, but they're not actually rioting, right? And then you have people who claim to be Christians that aren't following the law of God, not following the Bible, they're not doing anything that has to do with the Bible, because they're following the church corporation, which lies to them at every turn and steers them away from God, doesn't even teach them the name of God. So this whole thing, when you're talking about true religion, right? One who assumes a piety and virtue when he is destitute of true religion, that's a hypocrite. True religion is actually the law of God. The Bible spells out the law of God, which is self-evident. It's charity, it's forgiveness, it's all these different things, but it's also keeping yourself pure from artificial things. No lies. Live in the truth. Do not take flattering titles. Do not even take a name. Because the name is not, it's not your own. It's a person, place, or thing, right? A name is a noun. A noun is a person, place, or thing. Well, persons, places, or jurisdictions. A person is a status and a thing is a property. No, you shouldn't have a name. If you don't have a name, it's what they call your Christian name. You shouldn't have a surname, which attaches a legal name to the Christian name, and therefore you're a hypocrite. You've abandoned your Christian name. You're not acting under it, and you're acting under the full name or the legal name. See, that's how this whole system works. And you're assuming a false appearance. That's what hypocrisy means. That's what we're all doing. I'm doing it. You're doing it. Everyone's doing it because we're acting as United States citizens. We're acting as subjects of government when the whole history and the whole thing is founded on free men starting a government to protect their freedom, and yet we've given up our freedom in exchange for what? A franchise? An artificial sense of security? Credit? The ability to make money? To harm each other? These are our benefits. We can harm each other and have insurance. We can do all these things. See, we're not acting as we should. And that's the problem. And again, if you're so hung up on this founding father story and the wars that were fought, then by all means, you should be in a quorum right now, creating your own constitution, creating your own Declaration of Independence.
Hey, that sounds like a pretty good idea.
I mean, why don't each of us come up with our own Declaration of Independence? Why does it need to be more than me? why can't I do my own?
Sure.
And the answer to that is, well, because I'm a U.S. citizen. I have a certain law that I must follow, and I cannot follow the law of God. I am kept from following the law of the Bible. And what's so important about that is that the Bible is listed as part of the common law. It is the foundation of all the maxims of law that are good, that are on your side, until you contract. And then you lose, you sell those rights, right? All those maxims of law, a lot of the sayings we use come straight from the Bible. We don't even know it. And that's why I keep telling people the Bible is a book of law. It is the common law. If you don't obey it and you accept artificial things, anything from personhood to titles to contracts to money to then, yeah, you're stuck. You must be hypocritical to your own belief system. You certainly cannot worship Jehovah. You certainly cannot follow Jesus Christ, which is the law of God personified to tell the story. You can't follow the law of God if you are under the legal law, which is it's anti-Christ, it's anti-God, it's anti-nature. It's the purpose for its existence.
Right.
So we have no power, is the point. It relies on us being men of God, and we are not. We are hypocrites, and therefore we have no power. We have the form of godliness without the power.
Wow.
We don't have the truth. And
sounds like an open mic somewhere.
What's that?
Sounds like an open mic somewhere.
I hear that too.
Okay, we've got an open mic. Ken, do we have something else going on? Ken? No! Speaking of names, let me backtrack just a moment. When I was the director of the Family History Center, because it was such a large family history center, we had special collections. And there was one special collection on microfiche, and it had 6 million names on it. And I received a notification from the leadership in Salt Lake to immediately box that up and send it back to them, because the Israeli government kind of made this demand. Now,
was that when they said, please don't do, what is it,
baptism
for the dead?
Baptism
for the dead.
What?
Yes, they were like, don't do it for us. We didn't give you permission to do that.
However, the problem is that there was no 6 million dead. Those records came from the Israeli government, from the official Holocaust Museum.
So if
the LDS Church, the Mormon Church, were doing this, you have to provide proof. You can't just submit a name. You have to prove, birth date, death date, that kind of thing. Well, if you can't prove that, you cannot submit that name for that particular ordinance. So it would have given away the entire theory about 6 million dead. Well, and another thing, of course, was that there was never 6 million under the jurisdiction of Germany to begin with, and most of the of the Jewish people were moved east into Azerbaijan and other places in Russia before the U.S. and Germany were in war. So
I tell you, to end any doubt that I ever had about all of this.
Oh, we'll have
John. Okay, go ahead.
We'll pick this up on the other side. We'll be right back. Alrighty. We are back with our guest, Clint Richardson. His website is realityblogger.wordpress.com. Okay, pick up where you left off. Where was that? Where were we? We were talking about the 6 million and the baptism for the dead. And
what changed my whole, you know, I was confused, didn't understand, and the next day I was perfectly clear. And it was a book by John Glad, who's a very well respected in both worlds, real respected. And he wrote a book called Jewish Eugenics. If you haven't
I have that book.
Oh my God, it tells you everything, and especially, you know, because my question is, what is a Jew? I still don't really understand what the hell is a Jew. Now, in the Bible, they didn't really use the word Jew. They used these old words, which were Yahudi or Yehudim and Eudios. And these terms were defined not only by Christ himself, you know, the allegory, the story, but also it was a known sort. It's a known sort of term, and all it means is those that are opposed to Christ. That's what it means. Those who are opposed, which means those who are opposed to the new. Because you know, the Old Testament, of course, allows everything from usury to eye for an eye to everything, whereas the new law is forgiveness, no money, no usury, no nothing, which is the foundation of the Jewish law, right? Yeah. So really all it means in the only important thing you need to know is that to say you're a Jew is not a race, it's not a religion, it's not anything. According to Jewish scholars, it's not anything except what the Bible really says. And to them, it's sort of like a corporation. It's a mutual benefit corporation. A couple families, you know, get together and agree to be organized, basically. So, But what really got, when the Prime Minister of Israel, and it was Ben-Gurion, I think, maybe.
Yeah, probably.
When he said publicly that anyone who says they are a Jew is a Jew, right? Because he goes through the different stages where at first it was, well, if your mother was a Jew, and then it was if you're into Judaism and this, or it was both, or it was none at all. And then the Prime Minister basically comes out and says, yeah, I mean, if you say you're a Jew, you're a Jew, right? Because there's no such thing. It doesn't exist as a real thing, right? It's not real. You're a man. That's it. Nothing else. Nothing more. If you accept the title, well then, yeah, you become this, you pretend to become this fictional character, you know, Christian or Jew or Muslim, but there's no such thing. They don't exist. It's, to say you're a Jew means absolutely nothing. But what happened is the funny part, because when he said that, oh, hallelujah, all the Ethiopian Jews, all the black
people, right,
came over to Israel.
And they, but they
weren't expecting
them.
Nope, so they sterilized them.
Yes. Okay, we are at the top of the hour. We'll be right back.
Broadcasting Network.
All righty, we are back with our guest, Clint Richardson. His website is realityblogger.wordpress.com, and we are we will take your calls at 800-313-9443. We were talking, what were we talking, well, we were talking about the Ethiopian Jews, and very
well,
interesting.
If anybody can say they're a Jew, then therefore, anybody can claim a spot in so-called Israel, right? And so all these black Ethiopians said, hey, I'm a Jew. Screw it. I'll leave my hungry situation disposition and come over to Israel. Thank you very much. And what are they going to do? They've already made the proclaim. They're going to go against the truth. And so what do they do to remedy that fact, which, you know, they've gotten international trouble for? They sterilized them, forced them to be vaccinated against having children.
Wow.
So all of a sudden, all these, there's a big vaccination campaign, and they were forced sterilizing women. Only the black ones, so. And that's why, the book is called Jewish Eugenics, because he explains, and it's very well detailed, very well drafted, and it's all Jewish sources.
Right.
So,
exactly. Very good book.
Anymore, when I write about this stuff, I use only Jewish sources, so nobody can say I'm anything but what I am.
Right.
But he has this section in the book, and he says, are Jews actually Jews? And he goes through everything they say they are, and then they change. And eventually, what he comes up with is that Jews are anyone who says he is, but more importantly, kind of like elites, right, our elect, the people, they are members, and this is his words, that Jews equal members of a cultural and breeding alliance. Doesn't that sound just about right?
Wow. Let me read something that I put in the chat room a little bit ago. We were talking about the Jewish people. And I said, and I quote, they were never in Egypt, and they were never near Mount Sinai. There are no pottery shards, no evidence whatsoever after they claimed they spent 40 years there. The Jews came from two different places. They came from Yemen and from the Khazars, a very warlike people who accepted Talmudic law in 1800 AD. And so, and who knows what else, but and I said 1800 BC, I meant 1800 AD. And so when you look at the warfare and the deliberate starvation that's going on in Yemen right now, what they are attempting to do is to destroy the evidence of the original site of Jerusalem. And also, you have to remember that one of Paul's major proselyting expeditions was to Arabia. And why would he go to Arabia, where Yemen was? And in 1948, the American government, the English government, several other governments provided airplanes to remove the remaining Yemenite Jews from Yemen, and they took them to Israel. And so what the war is all about is destroying the place, it's called Bet Bays. Is that what it's called? In Yemen, to destroy the archaeological evidence and the culture and the remaining people there.
And I remember, I might have been the report from Iron Mountain or something similar to that, where we're talking about how you will see a bunch of new discoveries and ancient ruins and new parchments and all this stuff, including the Dead Sea Scrolls and all that stuff, right? That change history and that make people not embrace, again, the self-evident law of nature that the Bible actually represents. So along with destroying history, you got to create the new history, right?
Right.
Here's what it says in his book. Harry L. Shapiro, that's not a Jewish name, right? Chairman of the Department of Anthropology. It's chairman of the Department of Anthropology in New York's American Museum of Natural History and, subsequently, president of the American Eugenics Society. Pointed out that the ancient Jews were but one tribe of many in the Mesopotamian region. So this goes to any Jew who says, I am of the family or I'm of the bloodline. There, it's actually quite impossible, and he lists all the reasons, because just for one thing, Jews were enslaved, so all those women that were slaves, you know, they were getting, there's no way to say it nicely, they were getting laid by their slave masters. No, you know, there's no
way nice exactly. way to put that. Well, exactly, that's what's happening.
So, since there is no reason, this is his quote, since there no reason to believe that the founders of the Hebrew people were a distinctive group in their homeland. Now, this is a Jewish source. If you want to call me anti-Semitic, then you better call Mr. Shapiro that, too. Since there is no reason to believe that the founders of the Hebrew people were a distinctive group in their homeland, linguistically, religiously, or culturally, it would place too great a strain on probability to assume they were in any significant way genetically or racially differentiated from the general population to be found there. Any such assumption would indeed demand circumstances not known to have existed there. Experience among better known people quite clearly demonstrates, that where barriers of culture, religion, or language do not exist, even genetically distinct groups living in one area tend to interbreed, thus maintaining a gene flow that would lead to eventual amalgamation. And he goes on in so many different ways to show how it's virtually impossible, you know, even were we to make the utterly impossible assumption that ancient Jews were all each other's clones and that their descendants experienced a mean rate of endogamy, meaning inbreeding, of 97%, a generation over the course of 2.5 millennia of diaspora, 100 generations, in other words, more than 95% of that patrimony has been lost irretrievably.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there is no way that you could say I am an ancient Jew. So that gets crossed off the list. There is no such thing as the point. You can't say I'm genetically a Jew. It's a lie. It's really ridiculous. Female slaves he goes into, there's so many different things that would show, yeah, you're not the ancient Jewish people. You're not anything but the same kind of victims that U.S. citizens and any other citizens of any other nation are. What's funny about the people in Israel, because any Orthodox type of Jew will say, you know, the Messiah hasn't returned. Obviously, they don't believe in Christ. So the Messiah hasn't returned. The Savior hasn't returned. They're anti-Christ. So they, how do I say this? I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. I had a really good point there.
He'll come back to you.
I hate when that happens. Darn it. I think I'm speaking too much.
No, you're not.
The point of the whole book is again what coming to the conclusion that none of the things that people say they are, the reasons they're Jews, that's not the reason you're a Jew. You're just calling yourself by a flattering title, just like any Christian is calling themselves by a flattering title, or any Muslim. They're not practicing the law. Jews are members of a cultural inbreeding alliance. That is, in other words, Jewish eugenics, right? It's a eugenic group. And Shapiro was head of the eugenics of America. So, you know, they're victims. That's what I was trying to say. They're victims of any other nation. What I find the most amusing about that is that when you look up what we are in this country, anybody that is part of a nation is actually goyim. So, if in Israel, calling Israel a state, then that makes them the goyim of Israel. That's the funny part. Because goyim means those who are controlled by, I have to look it up, it's part of my whole book series, but it's goyim are those who are under a federal government, essentially a national government.
Right.
Right? So, and the reason that these Orthodox say, well, Israel can't exist because our Savior hasn't come back. Israel is not a legal entity. Israel is not a corporate structure or a state. It's a people. You see, we confuse the name of Israel with what Israel was in the Bible. It had nothing to do with Jews. Israel were the people who followed the law of God, nothing more, nothing less. There was no, the Israelites, I should say, there was no, you know, the corporate thing that we call a state. That's not what Israel is, and that they understand that. But all the goyim, all the people that they're collecting from all over the world to move there, they don't know that. They there's no difference between a United States citizen as a goyim and a so-called Jew that lives in Israel as a goyim. There's no difference. And they don't know this, just like we don't know that we're debt slaves. They have no idea that they're victims and are being taken advantage of, because they're told the same patriotic nonsense that we are, which is, you're a Jew and you must hate every other, you must be eugenic in all things, you must do the, you must hate every other race, white people are horrible, da 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 da. Well, I mean, what's the difference between that and our country, really? You know, I mean, that's how it started. White people. Well, white meaning the color of your blood, which means white just means pure-blooded, in other words, of the relation of the kings and queens of England and of Europe. So, I mean, we're talking about, again, this delusion, these belief systems in artificial things. We're all born equal, remember?
Right.
You're not born a Jew. You're not born a Christian. You're not born anything. You're born a man of God. And then you're sucked into these artifices, these simulations, these hypocrisies, and you know, you call it the Matrix. What is the Matrix? Simulations, hypocrisy. It's we're all stuck in it, and the only way out is to go back, is to abandon all these fictions. And if you were to take the Bible and say, is it possible to do that? Well, it talks about the 140,000 people that might do that out of 700, you know, out of the billions that are on the planet. This is a very small people, and all throughout history, all the founding fathers and all the quotes that come from men who are actually free, they all say the same thing. Most men will not choose to be free. Most men love their servitude. Most men thrive on being the subjects of evil men.
Wow.
Sorry. I mean, so many quotes I could point you to. I have a lot of them in my book. So.
Talk to us about this new film. And when we can see it. You had this wonderful trailer, this wonderful introduction, which I loved it myself. I just loved it.
Well, it's a lot longer than the trailer was just the picture.
Oh,
but it's actually a lot longer. That section of it is a lot longer. You'll definitely appreciate it more. And I had to take out, honestly, I got called out because I was using pictures that were deep fakes. I didn't know it.
Oh,
so
really?
I take out a couple pictures because these a-holes like to put fake things out there and then they're posted and you can't see the difference. But it was pointed out to me, and again, you have to retract when you're wrong, you know? So I fixed that and focused on some of the other stuff, added a few new ones that I found. But it's actually, right now I'm looking at it. It is uploading to YouTube as we speak, and it's been doing that for a couple hours. It's at 40% right now.
Wow.
So it should be up by tonight. It should be up after the show, maybe 6, 7 o'clock tonight. Maybe later.
And
I can't tell, but I'll tell you what.
You'll announce it.
Yeah, I'll put it on my blog. It's on my channel on YouTube. Is called Red Pill Sunday School.
Right. I love that. It's a good name.
Well, I'll just read you what I wrote about. Well, I'll just read it to you. What is lethal injection 2? A corruption of blood, part 1. It's a video book. So it's like a book, but you get to watch it. It's a series will be a complete masterclass in examination, history, and expose of the medical, pharma, university, and governmental structure behind the organized crime of modern medicine and the so-called pseudoscience that supports it. From eugenics, which is just genetics, to sterilization through inoculation, the full gamut of medical malpractice is covered herein, revealing the medical profession to be the number one most harmful and deadly killer in the world. Doctors kill more people than any disease, any virus, and have certainly destroyed more lives than any war. Prescription pharmaceutical drugs have defined the course of each generation in the last 100 years and beyond, turning each new generation against the last. And so we can willingly break free of this cycle of both the physical and spiritual dependence on government-protected drugs and drug makers. There can be no hope of finding peace and happiness, and no hope for children or their own children. In part one of the Lethal Injection 2, we barely scratched the surface of the problem by examining and questioning the unwarranted trust and license to harm and kill bestowed upon prescribing doctors through the syndicalism of university and governmental statuses, protections, and insurances for what has become an institutionalized practice, in other words, art, of malpractice, where any semblance of science and natural healing be damned. The first step in our collective recovery process is perhaps the most difficult. We must cast away our unwanted blind faith and dependence in the flattering title of the drug-pushing doctor. We must stop supporting that medical cult. We must stop supporting that medical cult, the harbinger of pestilence, disease, and deaths. We must fire our medical doctors. And look for the continuation of this series, which will be parts 2 and 3, probably equally sometime in 2020. So that's what the first part is.
Now, you said that you were putting it up on YouTube. Do you anticipate that you will have an issue with that?
I think if they're going to take my channel down, this would do it. It's got a lot of... When you put up a video, they mark it for copyright violation, and several of my videos have copyright violation. Now, the question is to ask, well, why is my stuff up and someone else's isn't? And, you know, back when I started this whole thing, I had the intuition or the spiritual guidance of something that said, hey, you need to do everything, you need to give up this money thing, and you need to do everything for free, right? No profits, no gains. Because what is a copyright? What does copyright protect? It protects the financial gain of the owner of something. Well, I'm not making money off this. If anything, it'll support, you know, whoever's being featured. People will go to them, right? So, in other words, the reason people's channels are being taken down is because they're in mammon. They're trying to make money from it. I'm not. I, therefore, or fall under the fair use doctrine of law, which says I can use copyrighted material without permission because I'm using them for educational nonprofit use. Now, everybody's complaining, well, you took my channel down. That's because you agreed to sign a contract with YouTube that said, we're going to monetize your channel or we're going to do whatever, and therefore, just like becoming a citizen of the United States, you're giving up your rights to the legal code, and you're going to fall under our end-user agreement. And that end-user agreement says we have the right at any time to take down your channel or do whatever we want to you because you've agreed to make money, the root of all evil. Hell, sorry, we're going to screw you every way we can. Now, I've never done that. I've never taken that mark. All my stuff is free. I'm not trying to make money off it, nothing. And you know what? Lethal Injection is still up while everybody else's vaccine stuff is being taken down. Wagging the Dog is still up after a month. And I'm going to find out real quick if Lethal Injection 2 is still up because you know what? There's not one time where I say the word vaccine in any title or description. Uh-huh. This is not a movie about vaccines alone. Vaccines are one part of it. But I don't want people to think that they're just going to be watching a vaccine movie because the first thing that has to be explained is the history. And we do go over the history of vaccines, but, you know, I'm not I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not giving them any ammunition or fuel to take me down. Now, that said, this one might be the one where they do that. And if that's the case, well, then I'm looking for an attorney who's willing to take on YouTube and end this censorship of, you know, when it's not allowed. When it's not, because in this case they're breaking the law because I'm claiming fair use. I'm not doing anything that any reporter or anything else wouldn't do. I'm documenting and teaching and not making a profit. If they take that down, yeah, I'm going to go after them. I'm going to take his court. And I think every single person out there should take them to court if their channel was taken down in a true censorship way, meaning they don't have a contract with YouTube. They're not making money. They're not monetizing anything. If everybody takes them to court individually, not as a class action, class actions are designed by the corporations so that they pay one fee instead of a million people going to court, which would bankrupt them. They can only go to court once and make out like bandits, right? And the lawyers make all kinds of money and you make nothing and corporations pretty much free because, hey, you took money as a remedy. Your fault, right? Now, my goal would be to go to court to get their license taken away because they're censoring people without cause. They do have a cause if you have a contract because they said, hey, we're going to censor you if you do something we don't like. But as this type of entity providing a platform, they don't have that right with my...
But a court
now,
is...
Now, again...
You're appealing to a government court.
Exactly.
So it's, exactly.
But in this case, that would be the jurisdiction. I couldn't do anything else except burn YouTube down, which right. wouldn't make people happy, right? So the only thing I have, the only recourse I have in this case is to go to the governing body that sets the rules. And they are breaking the law, so I'd have
All
to
right.
go. You have to go to that. But when you're talking about the higher law being broken, you can only, you know, can only claim your power from God, right? You can only
right.
claim your... So different type of situation.
We have a caller. You want to take a call?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's take Marcus in Idaho. Marcus?
Good afternoon, folks, and Merry
Hi.
Christmas to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
I'm sorry, is it legal to say the word Christmas? Have we broken any laws here?
No, we have not broken any laws.
Okay.
Christ is King, so that is something that will be forever, and you know, the King of Heaven will always honor the truth of that. Sir, I just wanted to I had issue with your statement saying that the medical doctors having medical malpractice insurance was grounds for us not to go with them. I consider the police officers, which have to have insurance out there because they pull their gun and shoot some criminal, which is acting dangerously on the street, they also have to have that. So according to your logic, we would have to say that the police officers were not the right people to go with either.
No, absolutely not. We are fools to allow police officers to have insurance because guess what? While you're saying that, what you've told me is that you believe in mammon, that you're in mammon. You're not anything else but mammon because that's what insurance is. It pays money. It gives you a remedy in the form of, well, nothingness, which is...
Oh, certainly. I mean, that is... I agree with you in a certain point. I've long held that holding car insurance was a way of the gangsters to get a control over a money situation. But on the other hand, breaking down in the middle of Idaho and then getting a 200-mile tow for free because I have insurance... is a benefit. So in that
it's
case,
it's a benefit. It's a benefit in mammon. It doesn't exist in nature, does it? Or do you have insurance by God?
it doesn't exist in nature, but a lot of things. A house doesn't exist in nature. Electricity doesn't exist in nature.
What?
Other than very few and far between.
Yes, it does.
What are you talking about?
Electricity.
A car doesn't.
We have
a vehicle.
Lightning strikes a second. What are you talking about?
No. You're confusing real things with artificial things. Insurance is words on paper, nothing else. Money is a artificial valuation. That's what mammon is. It's when you put an artificial value on things instead of considering it priceless, which is God, nature. Everything in nature is priceless. You are supposed to be priceless, but as soon as I put the word slave on you, then you have a value. As soon as I put the word citizen or capital, you know, counts you by the head in capitalism, then you have a value,
you've
and
got
now you're in mammon.
Black people that get shot by cops and they're getting $12 million, $15 million, $20 million by the counties or the mayors that they live in. They're putting a price tag on them, but they, you know, the people are fine with that. I mean,
and where do you think that money? Where do you think that money is coming from?
Well, it's coming from our taxes. It's coming from the fact that we work for a living and put money into a system.
Think about the question: where is the money coming from?
Where does the money ever come from? We live on an earth that we've created a system. I mean, rocks were a form of currency at a certain time of our existence. I mean, you've got taxes that are a form of currency. I mean, there's a form of, way of sharing.
You're missing
when
the point.
We have such
it's
a huge society, we need a
value.
We don't need a different way of sharing to be able to give and take the products that we need.
Money becomes money. Money is for the purpose of not sharing. I disagree with you on that.
I mean, if I have a need for something, then I can go ahead and give somebody money for that, and they give me the product. That is a way of sharing, in a certain sense. I mean, certainly there's people which get a lot of money on the other side, and it's an unbalanced system. But that's not something that we as individuals, interested individuals, which think life is a beautiful gift from God, are able to interact
with. We're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead. To change the bad to good.
Right, here we are back. Our guest is Clint Richardson, and we still have Marcus in Idaho. You were in the middle of conversation when we...
Well, first of all, one of the big problems we all have, and one of my specialties is language. I never want to use words that can be misunderstood or mistaken, and I certainly don't want to use words in places where they shouldn't be. Sharing certainly is one of those words. Partaking or having a part with another, or participation, right? That doesn't really involve money. To share is to give someone a part or a portion. The difference between that and a monetary transaction is that you're adding to something. In other words, I'm not giving you a part of something. I'm giving you one thing and you're giving me something. Whereas if I share, I'm giving you a part of what I have and not getting anything in return. That's the difference. When you're talking about sharing, you're giving of yourself. You're not taking, you're sharing, you're giving. Big difference.
Yes, but what we've had in society, even from the oldest days of society, if you didn't have a monetary system, then it was a taking of other individuals, other individuals' goods. That's what it involved, taking the cattle, taking something else. And there was always a fact of, and then we got a barter system where we were able to
create
money.
Who taught you that?
Pardon?
Who taught you that?
Well, I've read quite a bit in my life, and
So in other words, the creators of history, who are always the victors and the vanquishers, taught you that their capitalist system is necessary because without it, the law of nature would apply, which means you'd actually have charity and share what you have, which is what most people do around the world.
I haven't seen any cats out there. I've got a bunch of wild cats that I feed every day. I feed them once a day. And they're not up to sharing. I mean, they are the natural system. They don't want to share. If they can attack your animal and take away what they have, and that's a system, that's a basic animalistic system. We have evolved beyond that with our intellect, and we've thought that the best way to be able to interact with each other in the goods and services that we need is by the use of money. I don't see a better way out there. I mean, if you can tell me a better way,
you started this conversation by saying Christ is king, therefore you must at least somewhat have an idea of what the Bible says about money and mammon, right?
That God told the Moses and the Israelites that they could go ahead and take over the Amorites' territory, but don't touch Lot's territory. Go ahead and destroy them and take all their vanquish them and take all their good.
So you're going to the Old Testament for your law, which, so are you a Jew?
No, I'm not a Jew. Austrian.
You're claiming the Jewish law, which is the Old Testament, right? So
no, I'm talking about the Bible. And the Bible is the historical situation that that the world has gone through. It matters just the same as them as the steel of our American political situation, which is happening now. Which is all involved with money. Yeah,
money can be a great blessing to many people
and has been in many ways. It has saved people's lives and
under no circumstances is money a blessing. It is a curse in all senses. And if you don't understand that, man, you got a lot of studying to do. I mean, right?
I guess I've got a lot of studying to do. I mean, even if you look at St. Francis, St. Francis was a beautiful expression of giving up money and everything. But what did the church do, and what did St. Francis's Franciscans do? They were given land. They were given property. They were given vineyards. They were given oxen. They were given places so that they could grow, but that was money. In a form, we have monetized everything in this world, and I mean, you want a piece of glass? You gotta buy it. It's not gonna come free, unless you steal it. And that is against God's will, of course. So we've gotta find out the avenues that we have to do things rightly
I suggest to read Economic Hitman, how money is used to take over countries, but not necessarily money, but debt, and then the debt can't be paid, and therefore, yeah, that's how the world actually works. You're talking about, well, what you're doing is confusing charity or sharing with commerce or legal activity, and you just can't do that. It's just, I mean, there's no use in even going further with the conversation if you don't see the difference between those two things. You're already lost to the system to the matrix, the mammon. I mean, you've got charity for the church,
and the church turns around and
takes
that money.
The church does not commit charity. You see, okay, charity again. There's real charity, and then there's corporate. The corporations called charities. That's what a church is. Churches don't do charity. See, when you give money to a charity, what that's doing is stopping you from being charitable. This is the confusion that people have. I believe if you give money to a charity, then you've actually committed an act of charity, when in fact you haven't. You've actually given money as an excuse not to be charitable. See, everything is backwards. Everything is inverted. Everything is messed up. And the sooner that you recognize that, the sooner you can come out of her, which is this Babylonian system we're in. That's not charity. That's not even sharing. That's, you know, most people give to charities for a tax write-off. Again, that's not charity. So, I don't know what I can say to you to because if you don't see the difference, I don't know what else to say.
Well, we could, let's take our next caller. I think you've said sufficient. I got it. So let's take it.
If you consider it, like, charity is the cure for all ills in the financial commercial world. If you were to commit charity, there's nothing that anybody can do to you. If you are to forgive, think about what forgiveness does. It wipes out the entire need for attorneys and courts and everything else. The whole system, legal system, requires you not to forgive, right? Every part of the legal system is designed to cause you to worship mammon, the value ace, the false valuation of things, and instead of the pricelessness of God and nature, and to harm each other, to bring each other into this legal system, or injure, to bring into the law. Jure means law. Right? That's what it's designed to do. The things that will fix that are to never act in trade, but to always give. Right? The Bible says no man should be wealthy until all men are wealthy. In other words, there is no such thing as wealth, because the second you have more than you need, you give it away. That's not commerce. That's charity. And if you don't know the difference between those two things, you know, like I said, you're lost. You're hopelessly lost.
All righty. Okay, sounds good. Good explanation, as always. So let's take Andy in Texas. Andy, thank you, Marcus, for your phone call. Andy in Texas.
Hey, how are you two doing today?
Good.
Okay, well, I would like to ask this gentleman. He's very perceptive. He's very in the knowledge. I understand this whole money thing. I don't think your last caller kind of got it, but I would like to know, how would you perceive a society today? Say we just stayed with gold and silver coins and we traded minimal with that, but our biggest commodity was the ability to barter. And that was what we went with, instead of trying to find a monetary system with banks and stuff like that. Where do you see us being at if we had just went with the barter system with minimal, let's say, indigenous wonderful pieces of gold?
I just don't think there is any system of monetary, you know, anything to do with bartering or trade or commerce or anything else that can fix the problem of one evil, malintended, you know, participant who starts hoarding and eventually becomes a grocer or engrosses, which means to hoard up everything and then charge higher prices, and then eventually all the money, and basically that's government, right? Someone's always looking to be in charge of the monetary system or the trade system in a way or tax it or do something to it. And the only way that can happen is, of course, through this false value that we put on things. So the very definition of trade and bartering is saying my chicken is worth this much in artificial value. That's mammon. Mammon is not money. Mammon is value. This priceless, beautiful creature is this many dollars, or is worth this many eggs, or is worth this many, whatever I put a monetary artificial value on, that under God is priceless, right? But what I see is the solution to that, it's pretty self-evident if you ask me, is that, hey, we're in a little community together, we've got our land, and we're charitable and forgiving towards each other, and I have way too many apples. I mean, when I grew up, my parents grew tomatoes. And those tomatoes, man, they had so many tomatoes, cherry tomatoes especially, they had bags and bags. And the only way I could keep them was to either freeze them, you know, and that kind of ruins them, or to give them away. Do you think that my parents went to each neighbor and said, hey, I'll give you these tomatoes, but you gotta give me something in return? No, they gave away their tomatoes because they had more than they needed. Now, the thought of saying, wow, I have more than I need, therefore I'm going to try and earn or gain something, that is again the root of evil. That is where everything goes astray, because you're not taking into consideration the need of others. You're only taking into consideration what you want. So because my parents did that, and because it was just understood that if my neighbor had this huge cherry tree, and anytime I wanted cherries, I could go pick from his tree. Did he charge me for it? No. Why would he charge me for it? He's got more than he needs. He does not need money. But what he does have are these beautiful, beautiful, wonderful friends and neighbors that would bend over backwards to do anything for him. Need your dogs watched? Yeah, I'll watch them for you, of course. You see, that's what we're missing. We're missing community. We're missing sharing. We're missing being a part of something. That's what sharing is being a part. What you're talking about is what these people have designed to separate us, not to share, not to be a part of something great, not to be a part of that law, that self-evident law of nature. What I'm telling you is self-evident, right? What I'm telling you is that charity defeats all ills. No one would go into, you know, no one would be in need. And if someone is in need, then you give them what they need because you don't need it. You've got too much, right? There's nothing about that you can say, oh, that won't work. But we've been so indoctrinated and trained through the capitalist system. And capita means by the head. That's how we're counted. We are livestock to be counted in capitalism. We are what gives the United States its full faith and credit. We are possessions of the United States. All our property belongs to the United States, the corporate structure. That's the problem, you see. All the money that's made today is debt. There's no money being created that does not represent a debt that cannot be paid. So the whole thing is futile. It will always end up this way. And if I were to put it succinctly, every money system that's ever been created, whether it's gold and silver or anything else, you know, who's deciding the value on this? Not me. It's not you. It's some government entity. Gold, to me, has less value than toilet paper. Right? I predicted a long time ago toilet paper would be the number one commodity, and guess what? Look what's happening. Because life without toilet paper would be hell, but life without gold? Well, God, I can't think of a purpose for gold, except maybe the computer I'm on.
Well, you know, I mean, people have put a serious value on some things. I mean, diamonds, gold, silver, platinum, all these different things, they put this value on them. The only thing I see in value in life is actually life itself. So we're running around trying to get all these valuable. Yeah, we're trying to get, yeah, no, I totally see what you're saying. I mean, the whole barter system, I just wondered what you thought about it, but it turns out that what you're trying to say is that if you've got something more than this other person has, or maybe they have something more than you have, both people should decide to share with one another. And not just because it'll rot, but just because they know it's just right.
Well, most people do that. You see, what if I go and ask someone for help, I'm not asking the person. I'm not asking the commercial entity they're pretending to be in an artificial corporate structure of commerce. I'm asking the man of God who has morals, values, hey, I'm in trouble, I need help. Right? I'm not going to sign a contract that says, well, if you give me help, I'll pay you this much. That's not where I'm going to them. And most people have that disposition of charity and kindness and love and forgiveness as their disposition. But the legal system takes that away. The whole government runs on us harming each other.
All right, we're going to a break. Andy, I'm going to cut you loose because we have...
I appreciate the call, man.
Thank you. Take care. We'll be right back. We're back with our guest, Clint Richardson, and we do have other callers. Ken in New York. Ken, real quick. We just have limited time.
Greetings, Ken.
Hi. Where did the Founding Fathers go wrong in letting their little subjects have so many guns?
Well, like I said, the right to bear arms refers to heraldry. It's a capital word. A lot of words in the Declaration or the Constitution are capitalized, so you have to look at what that means, including people, which means it was certain people instead of all people. If it was a non-capitalized people, it would be all people in the world, right? So, when you talk about arms, you're talking about bearing your heraldry, your family line, as we were talking about earlier. Guns have nothing to do with that. What gives you the right to defend yourself? That is an inherent right. Therefore, to have a gun would be also an inherent right. But you see, you don't have that inherent right because you sold it. You know, the whole birth certificate process, putting you into the United States, taking away your natural rights or giving them away in exchange for artificial rights. Which is why they can take your guns away, because you have agreed that they're not guns, that they're firearms, a legal term, if they're not, and you've registered them as such, and, you know, I don't register my guns. They don't exist. I don't have them. They're not a property. They're not anything. They have no license. I don't need a license, right? But I'm in Utah, so that makes a little difference.
Yeah.
The reason that they had the common people had guns is because they enlisted them all to fight. They had to have militias, which were there to protect the states against the federal government taking over, right? But they got rid of the militias and reinstated the national or standing army. And at that point, you don't need the people to have guns because you have a standing army, and the last thing you want is another civil war where the nation's at war with its states, or it's common people against the, you know, we the people against the common people, basically. So, that's why, again, why does the Second Amendment refer to the militias? Because, you know, to have the guns, which is a natural right. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I still don't understand why they would allow them to proliferate the way they have when they can. I think more and more now they're worried about being used against them. That was that rule of.
I would.
I don't want to drag it out too far.
I don't think they're worried at all. I think they've got us so drugged up and so manipulated and so brainwashed that maybe 1 out of 100 gun owners would actually pick up a gun against government.
Right.
Well, unless you're trying to take away your toys. I just want to say about money being okay, I guess I better go.
We are at the end of our program. It went by really fast. Well, my dear friend, thank you so much. Hugs to you, Clint.
And you too. I'll look for my movie tonight.
Okay, bye. Love to you. Bye-bye.